Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of About Abroad, where it's my job to introduce you to people who have built amazing lives for themselves in various foreign corners of the globe. We're talking with expats and thought leaders about moving abroad, remote work, visas, and all the fun and practical knowledge that you need to know to follow in their footsteps. If you've ever dreamed of making a life for yourself overseas, maybe working remotely or embracing long-term travel, retiring or studying abroad, or even just taking a peek inside life beyond your borders, you've landed in the right place. My guest today is Michelle Colson. She is the founder at Remote Rebellion, and she specializes in helping people find remote work and build a location-independent lifestyle. So we get into all of that because her experience starts with leaving the rat race in London for the beautiful beaches of Bali. And where we kick it off today, she's riding her bike across Ireland and seeking out her new home base somewhere around the world. So this conversation takes a lot of twists and turns, but I think it's packed with some really useful information for anyone seeking remote work or looking to build a life abroad. We kind of get into all of it in this one. She really brought the energy and a lot of insightful information. So thoroughly enjoyed this, and I think you all will as well. Please help me in welcoming Michelle to About Abroad. So wait, I don't understand. You did is it a 2-week cycle through Ireland? Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, it was actually 12 days to be precise. I cycled from Belfast.
We can round up to 2 weeks.
Sounds more impressive, right? Yeah, I cycled from Belfast down to Kerry, to the Killarney National Park. I was speaking at Ireland's first digital nomad conference, Nomad Air, which was actually, I met the founder of that, the organizer of that, at Running Remote in April, just a few months earlier. And it all spiraled from there. And she's like, come over for a fam trip, check out the area, check where we can have the venue. And that was at the end of May, early June. And I fell in love with the place. I'm like, I need to cycle through here. So when I come back, I'm going to make my way and I'm going to cycle. So that's what I did.
Incredible. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was bummed. I was supposed to come to that conference, but it looks like it was amazing. First of all, yeah, I was going to go, and we had Danny on here, the organizer that you're referring to a month or so ago, I guess. And yeah, it just seemed like it was going to be such a good time. I'm glad to see it went well, and it sounds like you had a good time as well.
I don't use this word. I don't think I've ever used the word before, but it was transformative. It really was. It wasn't just the things I learned there, but the people. We formed this bond, and we were like a family by the end of it. We shared a house together for another 3 days after the conference, and we were like a little family. We'd wake up in the morning, like, morning family, what are we doing today? It was beautiful.
Oh, that's incredible. That's amazing. Was it a fairly tight-knit group there, or was that just the speakers, you mean, that were sharing the house?
No, it was a mix, actually. So there was about 50, 60 attendees and speakers together. And there was a group of maybe 6-8 of us that really formed a close bond that traveled on afterwards. And it was a mix of speakers, attendees. One guy I even met on LinkedIn a few days before, and he was like, I can't believe you're in my house. And we met on LinkedIn. This is so weird.
This is the world we live in. It's wild. I mean, there's so many of us that like people that I've had on the show, yourself, like I've followed your work for a long time. We've connected here and there, briefly in person or online. And it's like, we kind of know each other, but we really don't. And then you get together and you have like so much in common. And I don't know, I could see how something like that could be transformative for sure.
100%. Funny you say that. I remember meeting Gonzalo, I think, either for the first or second time. And I'd met him really briefly, Gonzalo Howell. I think most people know who he is. I met him briefly for the first time. And then because I'd followed him for so long, when I met him again at a second conference, I gave him this huge hug like he was an old friend. And he like politely looked at me like, who are you? I'm like, oh God, I forgot. we're not really good friends yet.
That's so funny. Oh, I love when that happens. That's amazing.
So I know you.
Yeah, we must be friends already. It does. Yeah, it happens. It's really fun. I mean, that's the thing I like about going to these events too, is like getting to see some of those people that you've learned a lot from or you've connected with online, but then actually like when you get together and getting to know them as like real humans, not like avatars and words written on the screen or through their websites or products or services or whatever. It's like you find out that they're actually like really amazing people beyond that as well. And I found that more and more like in this community of remote work people, future of work people, expats, nomads, like that whole sphere of humans seems to be just very much so like that.
Yeah. And I'm really happy to say that like 95% of them are exactly the kind of person that you would imagine they would be based on their stuff that they're putting out there. And like, there's always going to be that 5%. I'm like, you're nothing like your online presence, but 95% are spot on.
Yeah, it's totally true. So did you ride to from Belfast to the conference or was this afterwards or what?
Yeah, I rode there and I got there a day before just in case anything went wrong. And I went a little bit further south to from Tralee, where the actual conference was. And then the next day I did like a short 20 kilometers back to the conference place. And after staying in like little B&Bs, it was nice to get to a nice hotel.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, man, that must have been incredible. Do you camp along the way or stay in like guest houses?
I stayed in guest houses. I was going to camp, but the effort, like once you're doing like a 60 to 100 kilometer day, the last thing you want to do is pitch a tent. And especially with Ireland not being so reliable on the weather, let's say even in the summer, the thought of like packing and unpacking a tent in the rain just didn't really fill me with much joy.
I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, to a much lesser degree, I think this is like super badass that you just rode across Ireland. I'm like trying to process that because, like I'm a camper vanner guy. And, after like a couple days of driving and packing and unpacking and like, you know, moving around and stuff, I get like quote unquote exhausted by that. So I'm imagining like riding my bike across the country. That actually is exhausting.
I saw that you're a camper vanner actually. It's a bit of a beast you've got. It's awesome. You got it's an RV motorhome, right?
Yeah, I think it sometimes looks bigger in pictures than it actually is. It's a Ford Transit, so it's not like a full on RV kind of thing, but it's like a Ford Transit converted into a camper van. But yeah, I mean, it's got like what they call the extended wheelbase. So I have like a little shower and bathroom in there and running water and little table that I work at and eat at and a tiny bed for two.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I'm a previous van lifer as well. I lived in my motorhome for 3 months and then I got another camper van. I got it converted. That was a panel van that got converted. I miss it. I want to do that again. It's fun.
Where did you do it? Like what continent were you on?
It wasn't very exotic. It was in the UK for the most part.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's cool though. I mean, I would love to travel around up in that area more by my camper van. I plan to at some point, but yeah, it's such a fun way to travel. Like it's just, you get to see things in a different light. You get to see places that are, you know, definitely off the beaten path, but also just like a lot of natural beauty and villages and smaller areas. And so, I don't know, forces you to travel different.
It does. Whereabouts are you at the minute? Are you back in the US or?
No, I am in Greece at the moment. I'm all the way down on the little island it's the big island of Crete. And on my way, and I'll be making my way back up into mainland Europe, but I've been down here for about 3 months.
Nice. And you're making your way in the van up there, right?
Yeah. So we kind of did like over the last year. Well, I need to clarify something because I don't live in the van. So I'm a fake van. Like I don't know. We need a term for this person that just sometimes lives in the van for like a couple of weeks. We're about to do a month in the van. And then we'll get to another Airbnb that we've rented for a few months. And that's kind of the cadence. And we've been doing that for a little over like a year and a half now. But mostly in Airbnbs with little short stints in the van. It's like a means of transportation. And we're also traveling like with our dog, which is part of the reason for that. So like we can't fly him. He's a big dog, so you can't just like fly him everywhere. So we're like, oh, we'll drive. But this time we're about to take the ferry like all the way from Greece all the way up to the north of Italy, like all through the Adriatic Sea, which will be, so we won't be like driving very much. Yeah, so that'll be cool. That'll be a new experience.
I need to introduce you to some guys I met at the conference, the three of them, three Irish, like one guy, two girls, and they're starting a YouTube channel, I'm probably gonna, and it's called Only Vans. I mean, it's the best name ever. And they're introducing people in Europe and living in their vans or working in their vans. So you guys need to get together.
That is the most creative name ever. So good.
It's not explicit or anything. It's totally a normal YouTube channel. I'm not trying to make up some kind of like porn channel here.
I have no idea what you're referring to, you know. That is great. Well, yeah, I would love to be introduced to them, and I'm super curious about your story, because when we first got connected, I had it in my mind, you're from the UK, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're from the UK, but you were living in Bali, if I remember correctly. Am I off base there?
Yeah, I was in Bali for 2 years. That was the start of my official digital nomad journey.
Okay. All right. Cool. I would love to go back there, because that's kind of like that point in which I got to know you from, just from like a distance. It's like, oh, I know this girl. She's from the UK. She lives in Bali. She runs this really cool company called Remote Rebellion, and I want to know more. I would love to hear about that. It sounds like you're not in Bali anymore. So maybe we can kind of like go through that transition and learn a little bit about the saga of Michelle.
Yeah, there's a much longer version that will take probably a few hours over a couple of beers, but I'll give the shortened down version, the condensed version. So let's go to the pandemic. So 2020, I was in the UK. I was working for a company doing recruitment in-house. And I was recruiting software engineers, project managers, and a variety of people kind of around the world. And I was in London for about 7-8 years. I thought I was happy. I was keeping myself busy, going to theaters, going to the pub, doing everything you're supposed to. Living in London, should I say. And then the pandemic came and I had all of this time to think and realize, shit, I'm really unhappy. Like, I'm miserable. Like, all of my friends have kind of moved out of London. They've had families, they've got mortgages. And I felt so lonely, even though I was from there and I had friends, I had a good family. I just felt super lonely. Like, I wasn't living life the way I was supposed to. And I really had some time to process and think, right, what makes me happy? And for me, that was being around the ocean. I thought back to when I was surfing and I was the happiest I've ever been, but it was lockdown and I couldn't go very far. So I jumped in my motorhome, which I had. I wasn't living in at the time, but I had it. And I went down to Cornwall, which is southeast coast of the UK. And I learned to surf and I was so much happier, like so, so much happier. But then the winter came and I'm like, this coastal life in the UK is not fun in the winter. So as soon as I possibly could, it was beginning of 2021, my friend said, hey, your office isn't open yet. Can you work from wherever? And I'm like, well, it doesn't really make a difference. We're all working remotely. Does it matter? And he's like, well, why don't you come to Bali for a few months until you have to go back? I was like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So I went and I was blown away. Like, not just, I've been to Southeast Asia before, and I always say when I was living in Thailand, I worked as a tour leader back in the day in my 20s, like pretty much just paid to party. It was great. But I was so much happier in Southeast Asia, and going back to Bali, it brought back those feelings of like, oh God, I'm a better person here. I'm more patient. I'm more relaxed. I'm just a bit more zen, and you can't really be zen in London. Like, it's not a thing. So I just realized, I was like, geez, I'm happy. I met some great people. And then I'd been there for about 2 months and my boss called and he's like, okay, the London office is opening now. You need to come back. And I was gripping on like for dear life. I was like, how can I stay here? And I was like, I can't come back. And the thought of it made me feel really sick. I was like, I don't want to do this. And I'm really happy where I am. I'm going in the water every day. I'm learning to surf. I'm just happier. And it was really hard to put that. And he's like, well, this is company policy. This is what you got to do. And I was like, why? We've been working perfectly fine. I've been working to the time zone. The Wi-Fi is like strong here. And he couldn't give me a good answer. His computer says no, kind of like corporate reason. You know which sketch I'm referring to, I assume, if you made that laugh.
Yes, I do. And computer says no.
Computer says no, yeah. All of those Little Britain fans will understand.
It made me so happy to hear that, yeah. If you don't go on YouTube and type in Little Britain, you will not be disappointed.
Exactly. So I was really disappointed. I was like, I quit then. And it was scary for me because I didn't have any savings. I had a mortgage to pay for back home. My backup plan was if shit hits the fan, excuse my French, I go and live at my sister's in her playroom. I'm at my sister's at the moment, actually. Not backup plan. I'm just staying for a little bit.
Shit didn't hit the fan.
Yeah, shit did not hit the fan. I just visited. That's the worst case scenario. I end up living at my sister's. I have a roof over my head, family around who love me, and food on the table. If that's the worst case scenario, and the best case is living my best life cheesily in Bali, then I'm going to take it. So then I was like, okay, now I need to find a remote job. And that's when I started looking. And I was pretty confident. I'm like, I've been in recruitment for 7 years. I'm well connected. I'm good at what I do. I'm what type of person who takes action, goes for things. And I was having trouble. I couldn't find anything. I was applying. I was like, why the hell are people asking me to be based in the UK? I'm confused by this. And we've just been working remotely for the past year and a bit. So I was getting annoyed. I was getting more and more annoyed. And hence the name Rebellion. I really felt like there was something we were fighting against. All of these companies calling people back into the office, saying you have to be based here, even though we'd proven in the last year that it could be done this way and it could be done well and people were happier. So I managed to get, after a few that kind of, I think it was about a month or so of looking, which was a long time for me. I'd like never had trouble before, not saying in an arrogant way, but like I know how recruitment works. I know what to do to get noticed. So I realized it was a lot harder than getting an on-site role. So when I did recruitment for two remote first companies, I was talking to my friend about what I wanted to do, and Komodo boat trips and boats and bikes are where I get my best thoughts. The inspiration comes at me like from a dream. It's like a spiritual awakening. So the idea for Remote Rebellion came, and I'm like, other people are going to have trouble finding a remote job, except they don't have the recruitment expertise that I have. I'm going to put everything together and help people do this. So it started one-to-one coaching. I was helping people, saying like, this is how you do your CV. This is how you improve your LinkedIn. This is how you network. This is how you get noticed, and understanding the mindset behind recruiters, what they want to see, and the kind of how you can get in front of them. And a lot of people can interview well, but they can't on paper demonstrate why they're a good fit. So there was definitely something missing for people. And I realized after the one-to-one, there's more people want help with this. And so that's when I created a program. And yeah, the rest is kind of history.
Yeah, it is. That's such a cool story, though, because there was like a combination of being sort of forced into it, but also like you put yourself in that, you chose to be in a forced situation. And that forcing function was sort of important to like making you get to where you ultimately are today. So it's like embracing that little bit of discomfort was part of the journey.
Yeah, it was the best decision I've ever made. And it was one of the scariest as well, because that like you said, that unknown, you're in a country with no job and no backup plan. So that was quite, I mean, the backup plan is I could do freelance recruitment, but that wasn't certain, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Was there actually a chapter in there where you, or a page in the chapter where you ended up working for a couple other companies, or did you go straight in? Like, did you ultimately develop Remote Rebellion like right away?
Yeah, I actually did some freelance work for three companies, actually helping them to hire remotely.
Yeah. And so you mentioned, like, I thought that was what you said. I just wanted to make sure I was correct, because like you mentioned something in there that I think is really interesting to pull out, is that even you recognized, being on the other side of the interviewing table as the candidate, that it was more difficult to get that job remotely than it was in person. Why do you think that is, or was, and has that changed?
Why do I think it was harder to get a remote job, or why do I think it was harder to portray my value remotely?
I kind of think it's the same for me. I'm kind of asking the question from both those angles and wasn't sure how to fit it exactly into one question, but that's kind of it, right? Like, why is it harder to, so many, I'm asking because so many people that I interact with that's like in the audience for this show will ask questions along the lines of like, hey, I'm really good at this, or I've been doing this for a long time, but it was, you know, in an office, or it was in a more traditional role, and I really want to do what Michelle's done and go live in Bali. But I don't think those skills are transferable, or I don't know how to get a remote job. And sure, like we can just like, you know, say, yeah, your skills are transferable, don't worry about it, but you go fix your LinkedIn profile. But like, there is some truth to that it is harder. So like, how do you coach people through that?
Yeah. The one overarching reason, and there's loads of subcategories within it, but the overarching reason is there's more competition for remote jobs because they're better. Like more people, like there was a LinkedIn stat last year and it was only 15% of jobs on LinkedIn were advertised as remote. And of those 15%, 50%, so half of all applications go to that small 15%. So that just shows you the level of competition. So it's getting ahead of that competition. And the reason that people struggle is they often don't, first of all, know what they want. And I do a lot of comparing to dating. So going in to the dating world and you say, okay, I'm open to casual relationship, long-term, short-term. I think I want kids. I don't want kids. Like you'll be like, what the hell does this person want? Like, I don't know. Like this is confusing. And it's the same people like, yeah, but I just want to work remotely. No, you want more than that. And that's not just going to be enough to keep you happy. For most people, you're going to want some fulfillment to align with your skills. There needs to be a little bit more than just a remote job. So that's one issue. People just go in there like going into the dating world, like, love me. I just want a relationship. And like, it's kind of desperate. And no, not many people are going to attract the right kind of people with that.
Yeah, that's not quite enough. I can't tell you how many applications I've reviewed in my time at Doist where a fully remote company. And we have when we post a new job, we get a lot of applications for it. And I will see so many that lead with like, I want remote work so bad, like some more well-articulated form of that. Like that's the gist of the application is like, I want to work remotely. You guys offer remote work. Let me be your data analyst. And it's like, well, you haven't even talked about being a data analyst at all yet. Like this is like you wanting remote work does not set you apart from anybody. So yeah. Don't leave with that.
Exactly. And again, going back to the dating world, on the other part is the talking about what you want rather than showing what value you can add. And that's one of the things, there's many ways to show that is like, if you're going in and you're like, yeah, I want someone who's going to make my dinner every day. And I want someone who's like this. And I want this and I want that. But okay, what are you bringing to the table? Like, it's just like, do we share the same interests? Like maybe let's talk about that first.
People need to learn that on LinkedIn also, don't they? Like there's a really hilarious thing to me when you will get these like DMs coming in LinkedIn and it'll be like, hello, Mr. Warrington, I want a remote job and I want to make $60,000 a year. Please let me know if you have something. And I'm like, why would I help you? Like just give me something. I'm not a bad person. I would like to help that person if they approached with adding anything of value. So add value first.
Exactly. I get some that just literally say, I need a remote job. And I'm like, I need a Ferrari. Like, yeah. What would you want to respond to that? Like, I really need a massage. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say, there's some things that seem very basic. Like it's like, you know, how to win friends and influence people like 101. And it's, and there's just a lot of skills that are yet to be acquired. But nonetheless, like people, you know, it's a true statement. I think that a lot of people have amazing skills that are unbelievably transferable to this, you know, future of work, remote work world, that can take those skills on the road with them and build this life abroad if that's what they choose to do. But there is just there's a bit of an art to learning how to actually transfer those skills, like technically sometimes. And then also, I think maybe even more importantly is like portray those skills to those hiring.
Yeah, it's true. And that's one of the things that I'm teaching people is because the market is so competitive, everyone goes in thinking, my CV, my resume, this is the most important thing. I need to update that. And if I could just update my CV, everything else is going to come. But that, if I had to give a percentage, this is kind of plucked out from what I've looked at, it's about 20% of the piece of the puzzle. So there's so much more that goes into this. And the referrals, the networking and connections is such a big piece, but a lot of people don't know how to do it properly and they'll end up making bad first impressions, not because they have bad intentions, they just don't realize how they come across to other people. And that could be speaking to different cultures in a different way, like how formal you need to be, in what platform you need to reach out to them, how you can actually get them to read more of your profile and grab their attention in the 6 seconds that the average recruiter spends looking at your CV. Like how can you, yeah, 6 seconds.
6 seconds? You saw my eyes go wider. Oh my God, that's crazy. I got to get my average review time down.
But like, it's crazy. Like that is what the average person spends, and they'll do a scan, and I'll do a demonstration as part of the program where I'll do a literal, okay, this is how I'm looking at your profile. Chase, let me see what you do. I can't figure it out. Next. And it's literally, you've gone to the bottom of the pile because I've got 100, 200 applications here. I'm not going to spend 5 minutes looking at yours when I've got other ones I can look at, and they might tell me straight away that they're better.
That's wild. What do you see in that 6 seconds? Because you have a trained eye for this that like someone like myself doesn't have. What can you see in 6 seconds?
There's generally the job title. I'll have a look at the quick summary at the top. That's if they have one. And I'll look at their first experience that they have and some of their key skills and achievements. And if I can't see that, or I'm feeling extra lazy, this is back in my recruitment days, I'll do a control F and I'll search for the keywords that I'm looking for. So that might be, if I do control F data, and this is a real heavy analytics role, they haven't written the word data, I'm skimming because I'm not going to go and look through there.
Absolutely, man. That is crazy. And that seems like, that could seem kind of obvious. It's not like that. Like there are so many people that there's when you're thinking about a job that you really, really want, like not just that one that you just like, you know, this is the 100th resume that I've sent out to whatever job today, just because I am actually desperate. But like that job that you actually want, there's a lot of people out there who fall into that first category that I just mentioned that have just flooded that job portal. And so you have to stand out from that group, right? And you have to, be very intentional about placing those keywords in there just to get through that first round, then go and prove your value, but like get through that first part and give yourself a fighting chance.
And I think even for the people, you know, we're talking about like, we think these are obvious things and they're not necessarily, there's even more things that I just thought people knew, because you know, when you're so ingrained in the business for so long, you're like, I've been doing this for 9 years. I thought everyone knew this, but they don't. Like, and just the same way as I'm not going to go and be able to fix my car because I'm not going to know where to start. Whereas a mechanic can be like, okay, I'm going to do this. So people seem to feel like they have this shame or they can't ask for help for certain things, but it's not your specialty. It's not your specialism, you know, like that you're not supposed to know how to paint a wall really well if you're not a painter and decorator. And it is okay to ask for help.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I talk about this like ad nauseum on this show, but it's like, I'm such a big fan of just hiring people or working with professionals in whatever niche that is not your zone of genius. Like work with those people. Like you live in your zone of genius, let somebody else live in theirs and collaborate with them when it makes sense. And there are certain there's key parts of your life, like using the painter thing, like maybe you could learn to like paint your bedroom, but like if you're not a painter, maybe don't try to like paint the whole outside of your house. Like that might be a good time to get a painter, or like don't mess with the electricity if you're not an electrician. Like when you're talking about your career, when you're talking about like in the context of this podcast, a lot of times we're talking about, you know, visas and immigration and passports and taxes and moving abroad and like, you know, getting your dream remote job, like that might be a time to bring in someone that really knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Because it's not just getting a job or a dream job. I don't actually use the term dream job that often because I don't think there is such thing as a dream job. There's an ideal job that fits around your dream lifestyle. That's what people, and most people I'm speaking with, are looking for. So what is that actually worth to you? Like you're commuting 3 hours a day, and stuck in a city that you don't like, or you're going to the beach every day and having an extra 2 hours in bed. Like if that's not worth much to you, then yeah, go and do it yourself and take longer. That's fine. Like, and I always say to people, there's no guarantees in life. I don't ever promise, hey, I'm going to get you a job, because there's so many things that are out of my control. Just the same way a personal trainer can't promise that you're going to get a six pack. There's a certain amount of effort that you need to be willing to put in and a bit of grit and determination as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good analogy there with the personal trainer. I think that really makes a lot of sense to me. I can't help but think though, like how it also just, it correlates very well to the grit and determination that you needed to just say like, hey, I'm going to make this life in Bali work. Like I'm just going to go, I'm just going to figure out how to make it work. And once you got there, you did. And so I'm sure you met people while you were there and, you know, it's spending time traveling around, kind of living like a slightly alternative lifestyle, especially compared to what you're doing in London. Like, that's a red thread that unites all the people that I tend to meet through this show or in this life, is like, at some point they just kind of had to like take that leap of faith and just give it a shot and see what happens. And like, you don't know what you don't know until you get out there and try.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. And I do, I'm the same as you. I love hearing people's stories because everyone's is different. Sometimes they got made redundant, so they had to, out of necessity, go into something different. Some people, they had a bit of a safer option where they had half of their foot in their job back home and another half somewhere else. As long as they're doing something towards that, it doesn't have to be so extreme where you sell all of your belongings and move halfway across the world.
That's it. Yeah, I think a lot of people have that, like that mindset. They think it's like very binary, right? Like, I either stay here and live in suburbia where I was born and raised and keep my job in the office that I've had for forever, or I sell everything and become a surf instructor on the beaches of Bali. Like, there's no middle ground. Like, I do one or the other. And like, there is a gray area for sure. And there's a transition time.
Exactly. I mean, I think now as well, this whole like 9 to 5 has been vilified. I don't think there's anything wrong with a 9 to 5. Sometimes I wonder if there's this additional flexibility that I've got. I'm like, I'm actually constantly managing my calendar because I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do this in this time. I'm going to surf for 2 hours and then I need to, and I'm moving my stuff around all the time so I can have flexibility. That has its downsides too.
100%. Yeah. I talked about this recently with another guest, but there's like this, there is this philosophy of like called like the dizziness of choice. I don't know if you came across this somewhere before, but for me, it's just like, you know, kind of, it makes so much sense because we already make so many decisions every single day. And when we add in a bunch of flexibility, then you start making more decisions and you add more complexity to your life. And that's good. Like, optionality is good in a lot of ways, but there is a slippery slope downside. And like, there's some nice like security and peace in routine.
Yes, exactly. And that's why people, I think this message of quit the 9 to 5, don't work for the man, set your own business up, be an entrepreneur, that isn't the answer for everyone. And you don't need to have that. You might want it and that's fine. But being an entrepreneur isn't the only way to be able to work remotely. Like, there's entrepreneurship, there's freelancing, there's contracting, or you can work for a company and work for someone else. That's okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certainly not one path. That's probably the coolest part about this whole transition. Like, it's not about there just being like remote work now or just having like a certain type of job available to you, but it's like you have a lot more options now. And it doesn't mean that you all should get in one lane and drive down that road now. It's just that there's more lanes you could drive in. And that's the joy of this, I think, is like getting to choose the right lifestyle for yourself rather than being like pigeonholed into one option, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And just because you try one option doesn't mean you can't say that didn't work, I'm going to try something else, I failed, it's okay. And I've spoken to a few different people who actually set up businesses and they're like, you know what, I would prefer a second in command than having that responsibility of this being my baby. And that's yeah. Okay too.
We'll be right back to the show after a quick break for a note from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by my friends over at Lexity. I've lived abroad in various countries, and one common denominator I've found is that dealing with foreign bureaucracy is a nightmare. Trying to navigate visa and immigration waters in another language is not something I'd recommend ever trying on your own, even for the most experienced of us. So when I recently had to renew my Spanish visa again, I turned it over to the pros at Lexity. They've already helped more than 5,000 expats and digital nomads find a home and thrive in countries like Portugal, or in my case, Spain, also Italy, France, and Greece. Some very desirable locations indeed. So whether you're trying to obtain your first visa abroad, purchase a property, or work through international tax issues, Lexity's team of friendly lawyers is here to simplify your journey. The team is super knowledgeable, bilingual, and thorough, and I seriously cannot recommend their services enough. My experience working with them has been incredible, and I can honestly say I don't know that I would have EU permanent residency if it wasn't for the help of the team at Lexity. So if you're ready to make your move abroad, then Lexity is offering an exclusive discount to About Abroad listeners. Grab 10% off your first service with the code AboutAbroad2023 and learn more over at Lexity.com in the show notes and start your abroad journey today. If you've made it this far into the episode and you're still enjoying yourself, then I would love to ask a quick favor. Open up the app that you're using to listen to this podcast and leave a quick review. You can do this in Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and really just about any platform that allows podcast listening now. If you can't find that in the interface of the app, then scroll down in the show notes and find ratethispodcast.com/aboutabroad, and you should be able to leave it from there. Thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate it and hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Circling back to your time in Bali, I gather you're not in Bali anymore. So did you kind of made that home for a couple of years, but then decided to move on? Is that correct?
Yeah, right. In March, I was planning to go to running remote in April. So I was always planning to do that. I was going to come to Europe for a couple of months and then go back to Bali. Bali is a super spiritual place. For anyone who's ever been, they'll understand that. And I wouldn't call myself a spiritual person, but Bali spoke to me and was like, it's time for you to go for a little while. Like, you're not just going for 2 months. And I'm like, okay. So I listened and I actually took this like intuition, which I don't usually listen to. And I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to this. And ever since then, some just amazing things have happened because I've kept it open. I haven't had like a structured plan, which I used to do in that London environment of like every day was like structured and planned. And this is what I'm doing in 2 months time. I kept it open and opportunity after opportunity kept coming up, and I've had the best, what is it, 6 months since March, something like that. I've just had the best 6 months. It's been amazing. I'm in Manchester at the moment, just got back from Ireland, and I'm heading to Madeira on Friday because I want to see if that might be a base of mine. I want a European base. I don't want to travel on the road every month or two. I would like at least to have 6 months in one place, 6 months in another. So that's why I'm looking for that place. And it has to have above 15, 16 degrees temperature. And the UK doesn't have that most of the year round.
Yeah, that would be a pretty clear, X factor there. It's not, UK might not work. Will Bali be one of those bases also? Or are you just looking for like a home base in Europe and be there for 6 months and then maybe travel after that?
I don't know yet. I maybe Bali, but I don't know. Bali got a little bit busy for me. There was when I went there, it was April 21. So it was so nice and so peaceful and so quiet. And obviously people started coming out. How dare other people visit to the place that I visited to, you know, like, and this is a problem with me. I want things to have a certain level of infrastructure. I want a CrossFit gym. I want nice restaurants. I want this, but I don't want people there. Like, I don't want loads of people. I just want just the right amount of people.
not those dirty humans running around in your space. That's gross. Yeah, no. I get it. I can relate to that. That resonates with me. I'll be honest. Like, so I never considered myself like a big city person. I like mid-sized cities because I like to have options. I like good restaurants. I also do CrossFit, so I want to have a CrossFit gym. I like to go to a co-working. I don't work from home. So like that requires a certain level of infrastructure, but I also don't love like the mega cities. Like I enjoy going, I've enjoyed, I guess I would say in the past, like going to see them and spend a little bit of time there, but like it's just not my vibe. But I do need enough to have some options and to have some like-minded people around and things like that. But I have become more and more like I really enjoy these like smaller, even smaller places than that now, where it's like it's even quieter, it's even like more access to nature, more like a tighter community rather than, you know, a lot of hecticness. I like to be able to park my car nearby. Like there's these little things that you find yourself wanting that, and when you're in a bigger city, you just don't have, or there's too much of those certain things. So I'm learning this about myself as I'm sort of seeking a home base, also like trying different size cities, trying different climates, different, natural settings, also just seeing a lot along the way. It's like you're doing, it's a fun process, and it's not like a tiring one at all. It's like, it's fun, but I'm learning a lot through it, you know, seeking that place where I think this is the difference. This is what I wasn't sure where I was going exactly, but this is the point that I was trying to pull out, I guess. Like when you're in the process of seeking that place, you're experiencing things in a different light. You're not just like there on vacation. You're not just passing through for a few weeks or a month. Like you're considering some places, like generally speaking, is this a country or a city or an area that I would want to like spend some significant time in. And doing that, you learn a lot about yourself and the place.
That's true. And isn't it, you used to say that you resonated. You mentioned all of the points that I feel the exact same way. Like, do you think it's an age thing? Like, how old are you?
Sure. Yeah. I'm 38. So it's definitely partly an age thing.
I'm going to be 37 next month. So I wonder if you hit a point where you're like, okay, there's too much going on in the cities here. I need a bit more peace.
Totally. Yeah. I think there's a lot said there. And I also think I have talked with some people in some like, you know, younger in their 20s or 40s or whatever. But I think there is a commonality here that like after COVID, a trigger was flipped or something, because people do seem to be craving a little bit more. Like Madeira, for example, is an amazing place. And like you see a lot of nomads and remote workers flocking there for a variety of reasons. But one of which is like, you know, you have all these things that we just got done talking about, right? Like you have the infrastructure, but not this like major city, but you got everything you need there. You got like-minded people, you've got nature, you've got good weather. And like, those are the boxes that people are wanting checked, it seems.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm hoping I get there and I'm like, this is my place. But I think we've become so spoiled as digital nomads, location independent, because you want to be like, I want the food of Thailand and I want the people of Bali and I don't want crowds. Like, I've become like a spoiled brat. I want everything.
It's that dizziness of choice, man. It's a very weird thing. And you try to shake it off. You're like this, like you feel guilty, right? You're like, this is stupid. I should not be like ranking all these things in my head, but you also just can't help it. And it's not super flattering to like talk about it out loud. So luckily nobody's listening to this conversation, but, but it's kind of true.
Don't judge.
Yeah. For sure. Someone's judging like, oh, you people.
Yeah. So spoiled. Yeah. I was the same. I felt this place, Dingle in Kerry, where I just came back from. Absolutely fell in love with the place. Like, have you been?
Yeah. I spent a good bit of time in Ireland for one stint in particular for like 6 months. But I absolutely love it down there. That's a beautiful part of the world.
It really is. And I was like, do you know what? It's got the scenery. It's got the people. I think are some of the best people in the world. It's got all the infrastructure. Like, it's got everything. But the weather isn't what I'm looking for. So I'm like, okay, maybe I could do 4 months of the year during the spring, summertime. So that's maybe for now.
Yeah, I mean, so as someone from the UK, how like Ireland's right there. Does it feel drastically different to you? Like, is there a reason you would go there instead of going to the UK, for example?
Night and day. The people, sorry to any British listening, but they'll probably agree with me. The Irish are just better. Like, I love the Irish. Like, they're fantastic. And I'll give you an example of like the comparison. I was cycling to the ferry from Liverpool to get over to Belfast. And I had two people shout out their car windows. Like, I couldn't understand the first one. And the second one was like, get a effing car, was what he shouted out of the window. And I'm like, how rude. And then I got into Ireland and everyone was like making way, giving me loads of space. Like, and I was like, I love you, Irish. Like, do the best.
They are so kind. It is like a, you know, not just comparing to the British, just I'm an American, like compared to Americans, compared to the Spanish, like people think I lived in Spain for 5 years. People think Spanish are like very warm and open. And they are, but like not compared to the Irish. The Irish will literally, like this has happened to me, like literally invite you in for breakfast and like sit down and have a breakfast. There may or may not be a Guinness involved. And that's fine too. But it's just such a warm, talkative, like friendly culture. And, you know, what's funny is my wife and I keep saying, so we're here in Crete right now, and we'd spent some time in Greece before, but we had not been to Crete, and I hadn't spent a significant amount of time in Greece to be able to say whether this is a Crete thing or a Greece thing, because previously it was all just kind of like touristy, you know, kind of stuff. But spending several months here on this particular island, we keep saying like the only people that rival the Irish in terms of like just hospitality and nice, just being purely genuinely nice, are the people here. As far as like what I've just gotten like incredible good vibes from the people here. And I've not traveled the whole world. There's plenty of places I haven't seen. So I would love to hear from people if they have a difference of opinion, but like, it's been an incredible surprise that I wasn't expecting. And I've really enjoyed that about being here.
Okay, now I've got to add that to my list. Stop giving me more places to add to my list, please.
This is the problem with having these conversations. Yeah.
Literally did this. I had a call with someone this morning. They were like, Macedonia. So I'm like, okay, now I've got adding Macedonia here. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think you're going to love Madeira. I have to say, like, I was there in February for the first time. And I just think naturally a unbelievably beautiful place, super friendly people, amazing vibe from the expats and the locals and the nomads. And you just have like such a great mix there. The downside for me with Madeira, I guess, is only that you're kind of like far from, like you're not trapped, but you're sort of like down there on the island. So you've got to get back to Europe or something. You have to take some flights or something, but that's like literally the only thing I could find against it. And for me, it's an awesome place.
Okay, I'm gonna have to get some tips after offline, because I've only got 3 weeks there. I would like to spend longer, but I'll go back again if I feel like 3 weeks could be enough to be like, I want to go back and spend some more time.
Yeah. I hope you enjoy. Do you have any other places on your list that you want to get to?
Well, Crete was actually on my list already, but you've kind of sealed the deal of like checking that off. But I also want to try a few places in Central America. So I want to like have a look at Costa Rica, and also I want to look at Nicaragua as options. So yeah, there's lots on the list.
Nice. It sounds like a fun year. I wanted to ask you about that. Coming from the UK, Brexit and everything, what's your, like, can you quickly and easily move to a place like Madeira or to Crete, for example, or do you, if you wanted to, like, if you want to make it a home base?
I mean, I'm looking to marry a European, so if there's anyone looking to offer their passport up for a replacement for marriage, I'll put this out to the world. No, I'm only joking.
We'll put her link in the show notes.
Yeah. Marry me. Give me an EU passport. The quick answer to that is I'll find a way. Like I will figure it out. So if I want to, I've looked into digital nomad visas, and that could be an option, or it could be potentially doing 3 months of the year there and, somewhere else, 9 months somewhere else. I had to do my math then. I was like, geez, look, quick math. So that would maybe be a plan. I'm not too sure. I'll figure it out as the answer. If I want to be somewhere enough, I'll find a way.
Yeah, you will. That's the cool thing that's shifted. Like since from my standpoint, at least, like from the first time that I started looking into moving abroad, which like as an American trying to move to Europe years ago, like it was digital nomad visas didn't exist. There wasn't a lot of information out there about how you could, move abroad. It was just like you do tourist visa hops and you hop in and out of countries. And actually, that's what took me to Ireland originally, was trying to get out of the Schengen to reset my visa. But it's shifted to where you can have the exact mentality that you have. Like if you want to do it, you'll be able to figure it out. There's enough options out there. And quick shout out to our sponsor, Lexity, who can help you with that if you're looking to move to Portugal or Greece or Italy or France. The options are there. Like you can figure it out on your own, or you can find professionals to help you. But it didn't used to feel like that, and now it does.
Yeah, exactly. And it's nice. It's just a bit of paperwork, or a lot of paperwork in some cases, a bit of like waiting game. But the options are there. But goddamn Brexit, it's really it's not something I voted for. I was in the 49%.
Oh God, so close. I know. I mean, especially running in the circles that you and I run in, like you just meet so many people who have just been totally screwed over by that decision, and it is 100% unfortunate.
Yeah. But I've got Ireland as my potential new base now, so it shouldn't matter.
Super cool. Well, I think you've got some good places on your list. I'm looking forward to following along, seeing where you end up. And this has been a lot of fun. I'm glad we finally got a chance to like get to know each other a little better, and you shared some awesome information which I think people can get a lot of value out of. So a lot of fun for me. Where can people follow along and learn more, like connect with you online and learn more about your what you're doing with Remote Rebellion? We'll place these links in the show notes as well.
Sure. So I have everything. It's like remoterebellion.com. On LinkedIn, I'm Remote Rebellion, same as Instagram and Facebook. So type in Remote Rebellion. I have a newsletter and a blog that I publish every week. And in that has tips on how to get a remote job. It tells you different news stories about visas, give you updates on how to portray your profile to become more attractive to remote employers. And also I update a job board every week with only 100% remote jobs. And they're either 100% remote from a particular place or a work from anywhere company. So none of the fake hybrid BS that people are just trying to sneakily say they're remote and they're actually not.
100% remote as long as you're willing to work within 4 kilometers of our office that's located in San Francisco. But otherwise, totally remote.
That's actually one of my favorite hobbies is actually to call those companies out on LinkedIn and be like, this is not remote. This is fake. I don't know if you've seen
I've seen that. I love it. Yes. I love it. They need to be told. I mean, it doesn't do us justice. Like those of us looking for that type of work, just tell us what it actually is, man. Don't waste anybody's time.
Yeah. And if you're so on point with thinking that hybrid is the way or that on-site is the way, why are you hiding behind saying it's remote? Because you know it's more attractive to people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What does that tell you? Like, I couldn't agree with you more. I love seeing those call outs that sometimes those are like really entertaining. So keep those coming.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Chase. It's been good to have this time with you. Like it's we finally got to have a proper chat. It's nice.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it too. And I'm wishing you a lot of luck on the home base journey and looking forward to finding out where you find home. So we'll keep in touch
and
talk to you soon.
Share tips.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thanks, Michelle. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in today from wherever you are in the world. Once again, I'm Chase, and this has been another episode of About Abroad. For those of you wondering how you can best support the show, I have made it super simple for you. Just go over to the show notes of the episode that you just finished listening to and click on one of the two following links. aboutabroad.com/newsletter to get our monthly newsletter, no spam, guaranteed. Or ratethispodcast.com/aboutabroad, where you can quickly and easily leave a review for the show. It's not just important to me, it also helps more wanderers just like you find us. Finally, don't forget to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and we will see you again next week. Thanks again. Hasta luego, amigos.